Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 15th of February 2015. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Johnny Fox, Paul in London, and Gareth James. Right, recording is on. Well, I'm going to talk about Gods and Monsters at the Southwark Playhouse. This is a play by Russell Labey, and is based on The Father of Frankenstein by Christopher Bram, previously adapted into a film by Bill Condon, who won Best Actor Screenplay Oscar. But there were also nominations for Lynn Redgrave for Best Supporting Actress and for Ian McKellen. And arguably, this is the film that really broke Ian McKellen in Hollywood, although he became a star a couple of years later when he did both X-Men and Lord of the Rings. But this is possibly the film that really garnered him a lot of attention, although he had already made things like Richard III and had been a staple of British stage for about 30 years before that. But it is the thing that really caused him a lot of attention. This production stars Ian Gelder as James Whale, who is the director of Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein and one or two other horror movies, but also was the director of the initial production of Journey's End. And we're really looking back at his life. He's had a stroke. He's beginning to forget things, but he's also beginning to remember things in vivid detail. John, could you tell me more about this play and what you thought of it?
I'm very grateful for the background you've just painted, Tim, because I'm not familiar with either the 1998 movie Gods and Monsters or really much of James Whale's black and white Frankenstein franchise. The only way I would have come to it would have been through Young Frankenstein, you know, the Mel Brooks parody of all that series of films. But you don't have to have been either entirely gripped by the history of the Frankenstein movies to be completely gripped by the plot and outcome of what I think is a really terrific piece of new writing from Russell Labey. As you say, it's the expat British-born film director who has finished his filmmaking career, fallen out of favour a little bit with the Hollywood elite, and is eking out his final days in Los Angeles, although in some financial comfort, because although his movies never made him a great deal of money, his other investments did. And as you say, he's had a stroke and he's being supported by a kindly, although somewhat disapproving, Hispanic housekeeper. I mean, because he's a little bit isolated in this mansion somewhere in the Hollywood suburbs, you'd think it's a little bit Sunset Boulevard-y. And certainly when the film student comes to interview him, it's really like the guy coming to talk to Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard. You know, he seems a dinosaur. The play works very well by portraying the sort of crackling electrical storms that might go on outside, but also going on in James Whale's head. And you are given regular reminders that he has this disjunct in his memory between flashing back to events, particularly during the First World War, and a slightly distorted view of what's happening to him now. You know, has he created his own monster with the dementia, which is now adjusting his character or making him perhaps schizophrenic? Because one of the greatest things about Ian Gelder's, I think, wonderful archaeologically layered performance is that it just makes handbrake turns between a sort of camp seduction and really frighteningly convincing rage. So with time on his hands and a history of gay relationships behind him, he has taken to art and the object of his artistic affection, if you like, and I suppose this is a momentary shift from being Norman Desmond to being Lady Chatterley, is the visiting gardener. I'm sure lots of people will dwell on his physicality, but I just want to say from the outset that this is a stunning professional debut by Will Austin, a young actor whose performance really has entirely convincing lettered through it like a stick of rock. He is so, for me anyway, he's so perfectly the sort of hardworking, polite, respectful, provincial-born, all-American steak and potatoes boy. He could have been a character written by Mark Twain. And the thing I want to say about him really is that although you do notice his muscularity as soon as he appears in a sort of grass-stained vest, there's a bit of a gasp in the audience from those who haven't seen the advanced publicity perhaps. But then you stop noticing it and you just notice his acting. And I think it's really terrific that a young actor straight out of Mount View, which is a very sort of musical theatre biased school, should be giving such a fantastic straight acting performance. And I see, you know, very early Stanley Kowalski in his future. And probably if he has musical theatre chops, then, you know, Rocky and the Rocky Horror Show. But the writing is really what grabbed me. I thought it was just tremendous. And that Russell Labey's gift for dialogue was extraordinary, because I'd only recently seen Whistle Down the Wind, where he really did pin down very accurately the dialect and the rhythms of the speech pattern of Pennine, Lancashire, which is sort of where I'm from. But then that he can also do, you know, a few years later, so neatly, the back chat of the Hollywood elite. I really thought that was great. And I did notice in the auditorium, I'd never seen quite so many critics and bloggers scribbling to quote, copy down all the quotable lines. I mean, I don't take a notebook to the theatre, so I'm not able to quote them back at you, but several people are. I think Terry Paddock took the whole script down verbatim. So there are quibbles. The play is not completely perfect. Russell Labey has quite wisely expanded it from what could have been a two-hander, and no, that isn't a pun, to include two young men who play the film student and James Whale's doctor, and then morph into the characters that he was or he knew during the First World War. And that's largely very successful. A lady called Lachelle Carl, an actress completely new to me, plays the Hispanic housekeeper. And I'm not sure it's her fault. It may just be in the scripting that some of the lines sound a little bit like Cheetah Rivera in The Ritz. But she has some nice scenes where she is not entirely approving of James Whale's lifestyle. I would see that fleshed out a little bit more. I think this is a play which is still slightly in development. Some people who I know who went to an early preview and then came back for the press night said that there were visible changes, and, you know, maybe it is still being redrafted. But I liked it very much indeed. One other thing I just want to say is that I don't often talk about lighting, because I don't know very much about it, but I did think that with a very economical lighting plot, there are not a lot of lanterns in the ceiling. Mike Robertson did a remarkable job. Everyone talks about the nudity of the guy playing the gardener, but the two other young men also get their kit off and are involved in a sort of rolling around clinch on the floor. And that is almost lyrical because of the way it's painted in light and the beautiful shadowing, that their genitals are not the thing that is foregrounded. It's just the lovely entanglement of limbs. I thought that was really, really well directed and beautifully lit as well. That's probably enough from me. So who's next?
Yeah, that's enough from you, John. I think one of the things too about this piece, Gods and Monsters, is that it is based on a book by Christopher Bram, Father of Frankenstein. And if you've seen the movie, which I have, although it has been some years ago, and then you see the play, you actually think, some of the dialogue is similar. And I think in the notes of the program, Russell Labey mentions that some of the dialogue was so ready from the book that obviously both for the film and for the play, they've taken it. And so some of the lines, you know, I think it's well worth going out and reading the book, I think, because some of the lines are just incredibly memorable. But how they're delivered here, I think, is what makes this piece so special. The acting is, I thought, was overall quite incredible, particularly between the two leads of Ian Gelder and Will Austin. I'd echo John's comments that for a professional debut, it has star quality Will Austin's performance all over it. He comes across so natural, and the story, which is quite sad when you think about it, is presented so tenderly, as we have Ian Gelder struggling as James Whale with his monsters following a series of strokes. And I don't think it's giving away any plot by saying, well, actually, these are the last few weeks of his life and what goes on in his mind as that's happening. I think the play, I guess, is a work in progress, perhaps. It feels too long, the first half. And I think someone next to me said to the line, you know what this needs? I think it needs an interval, nearly towards the end. I think it does feel too long the first half, and the second half feels too short in a way, because there's so much that has to actually happen in the second part for the piece. And hopefully there'll be some ongoing development to sort of fix that up. I think the play works best for me, actually, when it just focused on James Whale, his memories, and the relationship with his gardener. Was it becoming a friendship? What was his ulterior motives? Was he just being a dirty old gay man? And you find out in the second half it actually is not that the case. So I think maybe, you know, even though the film has quite a lot of expands the story, and, you know, they go to various parties and things like that, I think perhaps the play would do better with just focusing even further on just Whale and the memories that keep come flooding back, which would mean, though, that you will lose some wonderful scenes. I actually quite liked the very camp film student who comes visiting at the very beginning, but I know there was mixed views in the audience that we saw that night. Nobody would believe that a man would be that camp in 1950s America. I thought it was funny anyway, but also I think the importance of that part was the device to be sending Whale back into his memories and some painful memories of the past, I think was quite effective. So I think, yes, it's quite an impressive little play that's showing at the Southwark Playhouse.
Gareth, what did you think?
I might be less enamoured of the play, I think, than the others, and I'll come to why in a minute. But as a production, I mean, it just oozes quality. You know, the performances, as both Paul and John have said, are extraordinary. And, you know, it's not only Will Austin's professional debut, it is also Joey Phillips' professional debut as well. I mean, he only graduated from Guildhall last summer. And although I agree with the point that it's a bit implausible to be that camp in the 50s, I think as the young Whale in his sort of youth when he's first dabbles with art, I thought he was very, very good. And so the performances for me were just outstanding. And I think the whole design, not just the lighting, but the simplicity of the sort of staging, which kind of gave the play a lot of room to breathe, really, was also very good. And the direction is just so delicate. So as a production, I enjoyed it very, very much indeed. I think that the problem for me with the play is that it's James Whale has, you know, a really interesting life, and we're just there for the last few years of it. You know, he was the son of a Dudley labourer. He went to World War One, as we know from the play. He ended up in a prisoner of war camp, and then he dabbled with drama and got lucky and directed the first production of Journey's End. That took him to Broadway, that took him to Hollywood. So it's a really interesting, and he did stuff other than the Frankenstein films, a lot of other films, which, as he says, as the character says in the play, you know, he kind of wished he'd be remembered for those as well as the Frankenstein films. And notable amongst those was the film of Showboat. And I think the problem with the play is that we don't get any of that, apart from the sort of flashback bits. We just get the last days of his life, really. And it's a fiction because it's a novel, and the film was based on the novel, and the play is based on the novel. So it's a fiction. But it's a fiction based on a man who lived. And I that doesn't sit very comfortably with me, really. I mean, I think you didn't need to sort of, you know, I think you could have a fiction without, you know, I think you should either have a fiction or you should have a biographical film, because that makes the whole of this play entirely speculative. And that was the bit that I sort of, I don't know, I thought might be just a bit disrespectful to someone who did live. So that didn't sit entirely comfortably with me, but it was a well-written play, despite that. The first half was a little bit long, but in production terms, it was absolutely extraordinary. The ending, incidentally, is very different play from the film, which I did see. But apart from that, it really does seem to be based on the book, therefore is following the same path, really. So I'd certainly recommend to go and see it, because it is real quality theatre.
We're now going to talk about How to Hold Your Breath at the Royal Court. This is a play by Zinni Harris, directed by Vicky Featherston, the artistic director, and stars Maxine Peake together with Christine Bottomley, Peter Forbes, and Michael Schaefer, amongst other people. This is a play, well, it's a form I don't like. It's essentially a journey. Something strange happens to knock you out of your equilibrium, and then you just go through a journey through the weird. It's a very popular form. I tend to think in German plays, I associate it with German plays, and it is actually a form I really despise. And that's going to be a problem throughout the rest of what I say. Although I don't think this is a bad play as much as, well, an unambitious play. If you're going to have to get me going, you've got to really engage me. And I don't think that this play did. Anyway, this play is about the character of Dana, who is some kind of public relations consultant. We first meet her. She's spent the night with a man who, rather surprisingly, claims to be a demon and thought that she was a prostitute and therefore is attempting to pay her. And he's rather angry that he's not able to pay her. He thinks that he should. And we get an inkling that perhaps if he really is a demon, that what happens to Dana next is all a result of that. She goes for an interview. It took me a long time to work out that this play is actually starts off in Berlin. It's not absolutely clear right from the start, I didn't think. And
I thought because we are dealing with everybody speaking with English accents, they're not trying to put on any fancy European accent. You weren't sure of where they were supposed to come from until it sort of gets hammered home to you that their starting point is Berlin. But that did take quite a long time to sink in with me. As she's trying to have an interview for an important job, she does rather badly, but gets a second interview, and it's in Alexandria in Egypt, and she has to go there. But at the same time, she's also developed some kind of nasty rash, and she wants to find this demon figure again who claims to work with the UN. And as a result of her research and trying to find out how to track down this demon and work out what to do about her rash, she encounters a librarian who constantly gives her self-help books, how to do this, how to watch out for demons, how to indeed hold your breath, as in the title of the play. And he keeps reoccurring throughout the play. What happens next is that there is a sudden banking collapse and the whole Eurozone fails and money stops having any particular value, which rather puts a damper on their being able to get anywhere. They first try to travel on train down towards Greece, and they get stopped. They have to get off the train because their credit cards have been declined. Money has stopped having proper value, although they do still seem to be able to use cash. They can't quite make any money, and they keep having to sell things in order to get treatment. Dana is traveling with her sister, who is pregnant, and at various intervals needs medical care, which they have to pay for by selling things. And she even has to resort to selling her own body at one point. It is one of these things where it is a journey into strangeness, this play, and although there is at least one good scene of a refugee boat sinking towards the end, which is done by tipping the stage in a rather good way and having a large number of supernumeraries slowly sliding off, I didn't find it imaginative enough. I mean, it's not a bad play, and we've got some very good central performances, but it's really not exciting enough or vibrant enough. I mean, you feel that if this was done with a European director, you might have got something which was much more of a visual spectacle, and each individual piece of it and each individual encounter which you get in these sort of journey-type plays, which is the form I don't like, you want more from it than just something which is rather ordinary, and it did feel very ordinary throughout. I mean, I don't think it's bad, but it didn't really engage me and excite me. What do you think about it, Gareth?
Well, where I disagree with you is I do think it is a bad play. I think it's a very bad play because it feels like a first draft that a literary manager and or director haven't knocked into shape yet. I think the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes are actually very good, but in the middle, and the middle, by the way, is 80 whole minutes. In the middle, it's just a mess. And I know she has things to say, and I suspect the things she has to say are really quite interesting. But they get completely lost in this self-indulgent, obtuse mess. And I think it's just such a great shame. And here we are back at the Royal Court again. The performances are very good. I mean, I've wanted to see Maxine Peak again for a long time and was really looking forward to it. And, you know, she is good with what she's got, but sadly what she's got isn't good enough. And Michael Schaefer is very good as the Jaron stroke devil character. Indeed, Christine Bottomley, as her sister. And I really liked Peter Forbes, and I like the idea of the librarian who kind of brings you this advice in the form of books. And as the play goes on, they sort of, you know, they change and they end up the sort of self-help books, if you like. I was sitting there thinking, you know, this could be a good play, but it isn't a good play because, you know, they haven't taken the starting point and collaborated together as people are supposed to in theatre and knocked it into a shape that was satisfying in any way. And it was just it basically stages a nightmare. And frankly, it felt like a nightmare. I mean, it was deeply frustrating to be sitting there for two whole hours watching this shoddy piece of work. So I'm afraid I left the theatre again, the Royal Court, feeling a little bit angry, really. It's yet another quality control issue for me in what's supposed to be the home of new writing. So I absolutely couldn't recommend it to anyone. They very wisely not put an interval in, because I don't think for one minute everybody would have stayed. And although there was a ripple of applause and a few cheers at the end of it, there were a lot of people walking out, and you could hear exactly what they were saying, who were as disappointed as I was. So very sad for me watching yet another bad play at the Royal Court.
Yeah, it has had some mixed reviews. I mean, there are have been some very good reviews.
I haven't seen very good reviews. I've seen a few 3-star reviews.
I've seen a couple of 4-star. I think the Telegraph gave 4 stars and one or two others. And I think also the Standard might have given it 4 stars. But yes, I mean, the Royal Court is using some fairly odd looking reviews on their review section on their website, it has to be said. So it has had that mixture of reviews. And I think some of the very positive reviews I've seen, there's a very positive review on the stage. They're sort of accepting that what the play was aiming for succeeded, and I don't think it did succeed myself. I think that they are attributing a lot of the thought that went behind it and saying, well, you know, they were thinking of doing this and this is what happened, and actually it didn't happen in the play. Perhaps it happened on, you know, by the time we got to press night, because I saw an early preview, but it didn't really get that far. And it was slightly disappointing, although it's a treat to see the actors. I mean, one of the things I mentioned, Michael Schaefer, he's sort of somebody who's come up over the last couple of years. He's really sort of come to the fore and become a really interesting presence on stage. We're now going to talk about Taken at Midnight. This is a play which was first put on at the Minerva Theatre. It stars Penelope Wilton as the mother of Hans Litten, the only person ever to question Hitler in open court about his beliefs and his policies. Obviously, Hitler was once jailed for stuff that he did, but this was slightly later. This was as Hitler was coming to power that Hans Litten actually got him up to testify at, I think, the trial of a couple of thugs. And he is put into a concentration camp when Hitler finally comes to power. And this plays about his mother's struggles to get her son free. As well as Penelope Wilton, it features John Light as a Gestapo chief who is trying to put a human face on Nazism, I suppose. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, I didn't really know anything about this story. I mean, it's a true story, as you said, of Hans Litten, who put Hitler in the dock in 1931, so a long time before he, not a long time, but before he actually came to power in Germany and cross-examined him. But Mark Hayhurst, who's the playwright, you know, is clearly fascinated by this story, because he made both a TV drama and a TV documentary on the same subject, as well as a play. And in fact, in all credit to him on the play, I think it's a very well-structured and well-written piece, and it's actually his first stage play, so I think that's very much to his credit. And as you say, it's moved from the Minerva into the Vast, well, not Vast, but into the big Haymarket Theatre Royal. And Hans Litten's story is told from the perspective of his mother, and his mother talks direct to the audience some of the time, and then also appears in scenes with other characters, notably this Nazi Dr. Conrad, who's played by John Light. And there's also a very nice performance by David Yelland, who plays a British peer who's seeking to help her. And we hear his story from his arrest through the 3 concentration camps that he actually is in, right through to his death. And his mother's working tirelessly for not just for her release, but also for better treatment for her son as well. And she's quite brave in the way she confronts the sort of Gestapo officers head on. She doesn't sort of hold back. And I mean, Penelope Wilton was wonderful. I mean, she always wonderful, but she was wonderful in this because she kind of conveys the steely determination and this kind of defiance, but also with an incredible dignity. And I thought it was just a wonderful, wonderful performance. The prison scenes are really quite harrowing. There's this torture, but the story wouldn't be told properly if it wasn't. I mean, you can't sort of, you know, you can't sanitize that, really. We actually only see the event that sparks the writing, as it were, the cross-examination right at the end. So we see that at the end in flashback, and Hitler isn't a character, it's a voice. So we see that right at the end of the play. There are some lovely performances in this. You know, we have fellow prisoners, Martin Hudson, who's Hans and Pip Donaghy, and then Mike Grady. And then we have, well, I think I mentioned David Yelland as well as John Light. I mean, one of the interesting things, one of the fellow prisoners is actually a man who won a Nobel Prize for Peace whilst he was locked up with Hans Litten. It's very well staged. It's got a very clever design by Robert Jones that puts this kind of very claustrophobic corridor at the back, where the prison scenes are enacted, and then the stage is really thrust forward right into the stalls, which brings you a real engagement, particularly when Irmgard is talking directly to the audience. I love that staging by Jonathan Church. It's not an easy ride, obviously. It's a play about, you know, Nazi atrocities, but it's a well-written play. It's got great performances and it's very, very well staged. And I think it's very brave of a producer to bring this play into a West End theatre, because a lot of people will be put off it by its subject matter and they'll be thinking, you know, gosh, do I really want to go to an evening of entertainment? So it's a play I don't think you say you enjoy or like. It's a play that you admire and you're glad you went to see, which is where I sit with it.
Yeah, I was a bit iffy on this play because it's, well, I found it a bit too much like a documentary. I mean, as you say, he's written, the playwright wrote this as a TV film and then as a documentary, or he's written on the same subject, both as a TV film and as a documentary. And I did think that it was that kind of documentary piece that you often get, where you have somebody reminiscing, where you have somebody thinking about it. So in this case, it's Penelope Wilton. So she is essentially narrating incarceration of her son. And, you know, we're gradually piecing it together, and then we get the reenactments that are going on at the back of the stage. And yeah, it is of interest, but it is the sort of thing which makes you dash back to Wikipedia to look up all the people and check out the story and go behind it and find out about all the characters. But is it enough of a real drama and a real play? I mean, I didn't feel that it was this as a play. I didn't think it was particularly a strong thing, although it is, as you say, a very, very strong indictment of Nazism, and also a very strong depiction of that sort of the torture and their regime and the way that they fooled people. And I mean, I was extremely angry at this English lord that they have. I don't find him a particularly nice character. And as I said, I went back to Wikipedia to look people up, and I found him an even more unpleasant character. Not a man I would particularly find sympathetic, because, you know, I'm a horrible warmonger and that kind of thing. He's one of these people who allowed themselves to be blinded to Hitler's evil because they put peace above that. And, you know, there are some times when you simply have to stand up for yourselves and say no. And he didn't seem to be prepared to do it. I mean, we do see that in this play. And of course, it serves this useful purpose of making you go back and making you look into things and making you research things. And it is well put together and well written. And you do have some very good performances. I mean, Penelope Wilton, John Light, as I mentioned before, was extremely good. But I just felt that it wasn't enough of a play. It's a bit too much of a sort of a dramatized documentary on stage. And I would have liked to play something more of a play, but obviously we couldn't quite get that here. We didn't get enough of sort of something imaginative, but I'm not absolutely certain how else you could have arranged it and how else you could have told this story. So I can't play armchair playwright here. I can only say it felt like a little bit of a documentary to me, but it was good for all that.
I think, even though I agree with you that it's got a documentary style, I think the fact that we've got, you know, this woman telling her personal story and we engage with her personally, and then the events unfolding as well, gives it a satisfying structure. And, you know, if we are going to make comparisons between the last review and this review, this is a well-structured, well-written play by a playwright making his stage debut against Zinnie Harris's something like 12th play, which is a complete mess. So even though it's got a documentary style, I still find it more satisfying as a piece of writing than How to Hold Your Breath. So I guess, you know, we have a different spin on it from that point of view, but I think it's still it's still good to see work like this in the West End. I think, you know, a producer is very brave to bring something with this kind of subject matter into the West End, and I think they have to be thanked and congratulated for that.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.